Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Let's talk NBA basketball right here on Drive Time Sports. Last night, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz are in their third consecutive win. They topped the New York Knicks. The Jazz are doing exactly what they need to do to get back on track, beating teams that they should beat, specifically on the road. We'll talk about the Jazz and more with our next guest. He's our Drive Time Sports NBA analyst, Jamison Welsh. Jamison, again, a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Always appreciate the time. Always enjoy the conversation. There is an interesting storyline floating around the NBA tonight. We will get to see Steph Curry back in action as the Warriors take on the Toronto Raptors. Perfect opportunity for the Warriors to showcase Steph with really a makeshift held together with paper clips and bubblegum team against the Toronto Raptors. There's some excitement. You and I were talking about the idea of bringing Steph back this late in the season in March. There's a new arena in Golden State. People have been paying top dollar. You have to showcase the talent at some particular time. It is the right time to bring him back, correct?
Oh, yeah. You got to bring him back just because of the new arena. You have a situation where, you know, fans pay those expensive, you know, seat licenses and season ticket packages, and they, you know, have missed Steph for 58 games. So you got to bring him back if he's able to come back. But also, you want him to get acclimated with some of the guys on the team that are going to be there next year. Pascal, the Andrew Wiggins, you know, you want him to get acclimated with those guys because those guys are important parts for what they do next year. So that's not a bad thing. Of course, he can get hurt again, and that can mess up everything for next year. But he doesn't really hurt their draft lotto situation based on the way the lottery is nowadays. So it is what it is. I don't think it's any harm and bringing him back. I think it's all good. Plus, the NBA needs to see a familiar face. We already have too many guys out for the year that the NBA knows we don't need another one. So it's good to welcome Steph back.
Yeah, as far as Steph is concerned, I think sometimes we forget he's 31 years old. It's not as if Steph is a young chicken anymore in this game. And Jamison, I kind of relate this back to what I saw earlier in the week. The league and major networks that have invested dollars with the NBA in television rights pushing Zion Williamson. Okay, and I understand why they're pushing Zion. I'm not taking anything away from him. He's that damn good, and he is going to be the face of the league, I believe, for the next 10 to 12 years. But when you look at the state of the league right now, you have an aging LeBron who's been brilliant. You have Giannis, who maybe was a top two vote getter in the All-Star game, but I still don't believe that Giannis at this particular time has the national brand that some of the other guys have had. Look, they're looking for a new star that maybe LeBron can pass the torch to. For as great as Anthony Davis is, Anthony Davis, for whatever reason, does not have that national brand. Steph Curry does have it. Anytime he's on the court for the league, it's a good thing. There's no question.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about how you're marketed, too. You know, it's very hard to market big guys, especially if they don't have a natural personality. Like, Shaq had a natural personality, so it was easy to market him. But it wasn't easy to market Pat Ewing, Zoe, and Rick Smith. It wasn't easy to do that because their personalities were different. It's more of a personality based and how you play based more than anything. But also, I'll give you a fun fact. You know, as crazy as this is going to sound, the market size, everyone talks about, you can do anything for any market. Yeah, that's true. But the marketers, they don't want you in small markets. They want you in the good market. They want you in New York. They want you in L.A. They want you in Chicago. There's a rookie in a smaller market. I'm not going to name on here. I'll talk to you off the air about it. But the Nike's already been like, hey, we need to get him out of there. And this is his first year. And I hear that. I'm like, wow, already? It's like half the season gone. Like, yeah, like it's not a great situation how they market their team, how they market their player, and we're trying to get this guy his own situation, and this market's not doing it for him. So, yeah, it's very intriguing how that goes, but it takes more than just being good to be a household name. There's a lot of things that have to go into it. Steph being in the Bay Area has definitely helped.
It kind of floats into the same argument that we have had on this show with numerous guests for the last couple of months. And I don't want to get into an NFL conversation, but this is the point I'm trying to make with the Tom Brady free agency saga. At some point in time when we're talking about marketing and we're talking about players in certain areas of the country, it goes beyond basketball, football, or baseball sense, and it really does boil down to the business aspect of it, which is part of the reason why I could see Tom Brady in Vegas or I could see Tom Brady in L.A. Jamison, there's a business side to it, and sometimes that gets overlooked just for the sanity of talking about the game. Right, and I think this floats along the same lines of that conversation.
Also, Tom Brady doesn't want to take any more pay cuts. Like, he's tired of taking pay cuts. He's been taking pay cuts pretty much his whole career. So he wants to cash out one more big time in a big market. So that's a little bit different. But, no, I mean, guys, at the end of the day, guys want to have control where they play at, and they want to be able to maximize their dollar because they're not here for a long time. And when you think about the NBA, like, everyone talks about the NBA struggles with ratings, right? Here's the thing. Look at how the NBA is covered by the media, both small media and big media. Look at the NFL covered by the media. The issue is, NFL, all stories are covered. So if there's a random team, like a couple years ago, the Jags were really good. They were like 12-4, 13-3. They were covered. Like, people cared about them because, hey, they were a pretty good team. They made it to the AFC Championship game. They were covered as such. Got the Milwaukee Bucks, who were on pace to win 70 games. And the only thing we talk about them is when they lose and when Giannis is going to a big city and he might leave too in free agency. That's the problem with the ratings right now, is that everything is negative when it comes to the NBA. Nothing positive. We're not hearing about the Grizzlies enough with John Morant. We hear about Zion because he's Zion, but we need to hear about more success stories in the league.
Jameson Welsh, again, our guest right now as we talk NBA basketball. Jameson, let's move on and take a look at the current standings. And one of the teams that you and I have had multiple conversation on, the Houston Rockets, they have won 7 out of their last 10 games during that stretch. They beat the Celtics twice. They beat the Lakers. They beat the Utah Jazz. They have beaten some playoff teams. Once again, I got to tip my hat to Daryl Morey. I don't always agree with the tactics that this guy applies. And when he traded Clint Capella, they went strictly small ball. I still don't think this is a recipe for success in the playoffs, but it has worked in terms of jockeying for position in the Western Conference. If the playoffs were to start today, the Rockets would be a 4 seed. It was just about a month and a half ago, we were talking about this team not even fighting for home court advantage in the Western Conference. It has worked to that extent. When you look at the standings right now, I think it stays pretty much the same, right? We have the Lakers at the 1, the Clippers at the 2, the Nuggets at the 3. I truly believe those will be the 1, 2, and 3 seeds when it's all said and done. Outside of that, you have a battle between the Rockets, Jazz, Thunder, and Mavericks, and I don't think there's any doubt right now, based on the way teams are playing, this small ball has been crazy enough to work on a night-to-night basis. Still don't think it's sustainable for the postseason, but again, I tip my hat to Daryl Morey. It's done wonders for this squad in the regular season.
Yeah, but here's the issue. It's a regular season situation.
Sure.
When you have time to really study a team and take away their strengths and really dig deep into them, it changes everything. And we've got to remember, Mike D'Antoni is not the best coach when it comes to adjustments. So I'd be very cautious, anyone drinking that Kool-Aid. Just be mindful of how, you know, he's done in the past. Now, they have had some success with this. I mean, they are pretty good with this lineup. However, the two things we know about small ball lineups. One is in the playoffs, you know, if you can't protect the rim and you have, you know, you normally have rebounding issues. That's normally how it's gone. And secondly, and most importantly, is that when you play a small ball situation, those guys that you have playing bigger positions normally tire out and wear down. The guy I'm going to look at is P.J. Tucker. How is he going to hold up in the playoffs, especially if they make it past the first round? How is he going to hold up playing against an Anthony Davis or having to deal with the Clippers guys or whomever he has to deal with in that second round? How is he going to hold up? Because he's a guy that's 6'5", that's playing like a center, banging around with bigger guys, and being forced to move out on the perimeter and hit open shots. Lots to ask for a 35-year-old guy.
It won't work. It's not sustainable in the postseason. It's not. And we knew that when this deal went down. The Jazz are not constructed to play small ball. And at times, we've seen Joe Ingles play the point. We have Rudy Gobert down in the middle of the paint. He's one of the best shot blockers, if not one of the best rim protectors in the NBA today. The Jazz play the complete opposite direction. Sometimes they have to rely on Donovan Mitchell a tad bit too much. I don't know if his numbers are inflated, but I tell people all the time, please watch the game. Go off of the eye test. Until Mike Conley becomes Mike Conley of old, which I don't think he can anymore, because I think, you know, without being disrespectful, he is old, right? I think it's that simple, and I don't think he fits this current system. That's why there's been so much frustration. The Jazz play the complete opposite way of the Houston Rockets. Maybe that level of game is more sustainable come postseason, but then, Jameson, it boils down to talent. They don't have more talent or depth than the Clippers. They don't have more talent or depth than the Lakers. And to be honest with you, I don't think they have more talent than the Denver Nuggets front to back. That's the problem for the Utah Jazz.
Yes, and you know the issue with the Jazz is they went all in on two guys that really can't create their own shot. Bogdanovich and Conley, yes, they're good names, but they still, one's a spot-up shooter, the other guy can't really go by anyone anymore. So you really have two spot-up guys, no one else that can create. So they have the same issues they've had for all these years. They need someone else that can break their man down, get to the basket, or create for others. They still don't have that, and that's still a big problem for them.
At the beginning of the season, you and I gave our NBA Finals predictions. I like to go back and talk about this often. You and I were on two different trains of thought in the Eastern Conference. We remain both the same. We both picked the Lakers. You went with Philly. I went with Toronto out of the East. How do you feel about the Western Conference pick right now as we get down to the final 20, 25 games?
Oh, I'm not changing it. I'm rolling with it. So that's just what it is. Yeah, I'm going to roll with that. At the end of the day, that's the that's the team. That's the pick, and we're going to go with that. That being said, I would love to be able to repick the East because the Philly's not making it. They have the recipe to do so, but too many injuries, too much stuff going on. I don't trust them at all.
Yeah, there's still that level of uncertainty with Philly where if they get it right, I wouldn't want to play them in the postseason. Like that still exists. I don't know if we see it, but there is a level of uncertainty that makes me believe. Like, if I'm a Sixers fan, I still have to carry the belief that if things get right, if they manage to right the ship, nobody in the East wants to play them in a seven-game set.
No. I mean, you got two all-NBA type guys, and when Tobias Harris is your third-best guy, you're in pretty good shape. And they're going to have matchup problems for everyone, especially when you think about how the game is played and, you know, in the playoffs, it's a slower game. So they're still a good fit. I just don't trust their health. I don't know how long guys are out for. A lot of uncertainty right now. And that's the case, got to be very careful. But, Milwaukee's the team to beat out East right now. Like, they're still the best team. Like, I know they've had a couple struggles lately. They lost to Miami the other night playing the third game of four nights, which no one brings up. But, Milwaukee's still the team to beat out East.
Best player in the NBA up to this point has been who?
Giannis Antetokounmpo. And the reason why I say that is this. LeBron has played very well. However, Giannis is like average. He's averaging like 1.2 points a minute. And he plays like 30 minutes a night. And also playing at an all-defensive level. Like that to me, like doing it on both ends every night. And especially when you're winning. So when your team is doing so well. And we look at the roster's okay. Like, it's not great. Like, it's not an all-time team roster. You know, whenever you hear a team on pace to win 70 games, you think there's probably a couple Hall of Fame guys on there or a couple guys that are really good. You look at the roster, it's like, it's okay. It has some flaws. And, I would Johnson doing a special. He doesn't get enough credit because he's in Milwaukee and he's not from America. But Giannis is the best player in the NBA right now.
I'll disagree and say it's LeBron. And the reason I say LeBron has had the best year is because in a world of positionless basketball, we have seen someone that is LeBron's age adapt to a different type of mindset, adapt to a team-first mentality, because the chemistry in LA is off the charts and it starts with LeBron James. And we've seen this guy basically play point guard. And I think once we get to the postseason, the idea of the Lakers not having a ball handler is not going to matter because you're going to see an even better LeBron as long as he stays healthy. I'm amazed at what he has done. While the expectations for you and I may have been a Western Conference championship for the Lakers, that was not the case with the mass media. They've exceeded expectations, and they've done that because of LeBron. I know that AD is good. He's great. Don't get me wrong. But LeBron has been just a different level than what we've seen over the last few years. To me, he's been the best player in the league. And look, it's hard to argue with Giannis. I get that. It is. But to me, what LeBron has accomplished this season at this stage in his career, it's unlike anything we've ever seen.
No, I understand. No, I trust you. I get where you're coming from. But we rarely get a guy that's scoring 30 a night and playing all defense, or he was a player of the year type defense on a nightly basis.
Sure. Yep, I agree.
Or combination. And that when I see that, I have to give credit for that. And LeBron has been amazing this year. Like, if Giannis was not playing at this level, I'd give it to LeBron. But, for what Giannis is doing, it needs to be mentioned more. However, again, he's in a small market, and people are more concentrated on him leaving than anything else he does, which is wild to me.
It's insane. It's insane. And that's the gift/curse of social media in today's game, with every aspect now being covered by everyone, right? We have a phone at our hands. We have Twitter at our hands at any specific moment. It's insane. And it's almost sad because of what Giannis has actually meant to Milwaukee, right? The fans embrace him unlike anything we've ever seen. So I agree with you. It is sad to see.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. This guy, he just wants to play basketball. He's not here for anything else. He just wants to play basketball. And they bring up everything under the sun when it comes to this situation. And that's just really not fair in my eyes. It really isn't. With that being said, I will say this. Milwaukee better win this year or next year. If they do not win the next 2 years, he is gone. That's just what it is. That's how this goes. We've seen the story before. He is not staying there to fight it out after Chris Middleton gets older and, you know, their cap situation is bad. Like, they better win in the next year or two. If they don't, they're in trouble.
Follow Jameson on Twitter, at the Jameson. We ran a tad bit over on this segment, but it's always good conversation. Always good to get you on, Jameson. I appreciate the time again. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. That's Jameson Welsh, our NBA analyst. We'll pause, come right back, and finish up this edition of Drive Time Sports.